for the benefit of those with flash photography.
We've made it. We've done it. Another week. Hello, dream workers. I am Colin Delaney. In a moment, you'll hear the voice of my tag team partner. His name is Cheech, and this is DreamWork. Yes, we have made it to another week, and this week is a busy one. Let's get to that off the start before we get into this week's team. So this week is a wild one. Today's Tuesday, so tomorrow AEW is filming here in Rochester at the Blue Cross Arena, and then Thursday, me and Cheech are taking on Stu Grayson and Evil Uno, the Dark Order, at in Binghamton, New York, at the 2CW reunion show weekend. And then there's Friday, that's 2CW in Syracuse, which we're both on. I don't know what we're doing, but we're on it. And then Saturday, Orange Cassidy is here signing autographs at Heroes Hideout in the morning. And then there's a Dalton Castle variety show going on at the Comedy at the Carlson here in Rochester. All of these things which I am participating in. So it's a busy week. We already have another team ready, but when we get to record that, I don't know. So we wanted to get this one out. This week we talk about one of me and Cheech's favorite tag teams of all time, the Miracle Violence Connection of Dr. Death Steve Williams and Terry Bam Bam Gordy. And we get to it in the podcast pretty quickly, but they are definitely a favorite tag team of ours. But by looking at us, you would never think, oh yeah, those guys must be big fans of Dr. Death and Bam Bam Terry Gordy. It's just something about it, we really never had that size, so we appreciate it, and it's something that we enjoy to watch. I think during this podcast, at times we get caught up like, what else should we talk about? Because there's not really a whole lot of nuance to what they do. They're just so good, and they're just rough and tumble and beat you up and toss you around, and there's, that's not as easy as it sounds. You can't just do that. There is an art to it. Crazy week, awesome team, that's it. Let's talk about the Miracle Violence Connection. So you probably wouldn't know this by looking at me or watching me wrestle, but Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy are like one of my favorite teams of all time.
Yes, you would not think that by looking at you or by the way you wrestle. Also, weird fact, same thing for me.
I love that. I love that. When this has been one of those want to get to, need to get to teams for a while, it just never seemed to line up right. But I mean, I used to have like best of tapes and DVDs of nothing but Gordy and Williams.
Bro, I had a long run of like Dr. Death being like my number one. Because, oh crap, it's coming back to me now. I remember, I'm going old school, I bought a lot of tapes off eBay, and like there was an All Japan one, and I watched Kawada versus Dr. Death, and I'd already been a fan of Dr. Death from 92, 93 WCW stuff, but when I saw that stuff, I was just like, oh my gosh, he's the best. So yeah, that kicked off like a love affair for quite a few years.
The best. And I don't know. I've always had this... For that type of wrestler and that type of style. And nowadays when I see other guys try to do it, like, it's tough for me. I grade it on such a like a deep scale. Like, you can't get away with bullshit rough and tumble big man when I'm around.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I too am very critical because I don't know why. It just hit me at the right time. I also think it was because I amateur wrestled when I was younger, and, you know, all they did was put over Dr. Death's, you know, all his credentials. So I'm thinking maybe that was the reason why I was also into him. But there's just something cool about a badass dropping dudes on their heads.
Yeah, and they were the baddest asses you've ever seen. They, no joke, they were it's incredible. I also was a sucker for those matches where Vader would squash two guys at once. I think those things are related.
Yeah, and me and you personally have discussed this, and it's probably come up on the podcast plenty of times, but for some reason, like, the Bill Watts era WCW just hit me like Cupid's arrow, and like all that stuff is like golden to me. And I know now, looking back, because trust me, I've dipped back in numerous times and been like, okay, it was, you know, it wasn't as good as I remembered, but man, at the time, it was just rough and tumble dudes being rough and tumble dudes. And I don't know, a little skinny guy like me was like, oh man, they're all badasses. This is cool.
Yeah, no, Bill Watts era WCW is my favorite too. The flareless WCW era is like one of my favorite things to watch, because they push tag team wrestling. They push Doc and Gordy, the Steiners, Wyndham and Rhodes. Like, they pushed tag team wrestling.
And obviously, as we would both come to learn later and then dip into, obviously this period was a big outgrowth of Mid-South wrestling, which was Bill Watts' first run, where people like Dr. Death got started. And that was all just big men basically brawl fighting.
Yeah, which rules. When done well. Never mind. When done well, it rules.
Done well.
Yeah, so I think that kind of covers our preliminary thoughts, but I'll still give mine. Mine were excitement. I definitely have somewhere around this house the Mayfield Mayhem best of Williams and Gordy somewhere around here. So yeah, they've always been a favorite of mine. And yeah, I mean, been looking forward to getting to this team for a minute now.
Yeah, my preliminary thoughts were, and I think it's kind of funny, we had covered Billy and Chuck. So my thought was, okay, we covered two giant men who weren't being the most manliest of men. So then when you were like, what should we do this week? I knew you were dying to do this team. I go, well, let's do two giant big men who are legit being the most toughest big men you've ever seen. So I went for that contrast between last week and this week.
I never knew that I wanted it until right now. But man, Billy and Chuck against Doc and Gordy. Woo!
Oh, it would just be a lot of big dudes, man. That's fool. We'll get into it, because they definitely have some matches in here with big dudes that don't go as well as they should have.
You got to reinforce that ring. You got all that beef in there.
That's a lot of beef.
All right, let's talk about their titles and accomplishments. I think I call it championships and accomplishments. Whatever.
Yes.
It's okay. Here. All right. Honestly, I was a bit surprised. So they are 5-time All Japan Tag Team Champions. They are 1-time NWA Tag, 1-time WCW Tag. They won the 1992 NWA Tag Team Title Tournament. They were the PWI and Wrestling Observer Tag Team of the Year 1992. And they are number 16 on PWI's Top 100 and number 21 on the Sports Illustrated 50.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, so then now you threw me off. What was surprising to you about it?
I didn't think... Okay, so I wasn't sure they were going to get Team of the Year in 92, although clearly they deserved it. I didn't know 5-time All Japan Tag. I knew they were in All Japan a bunch. And then the fact that PWI 100 list, which is from like early 2000s, ranks them 16, and the Sports Illustrated of 50 teams puts them at 21. I just didn't think that I just love as they deserve.
Oh, okay. You didn't think they would, because I definitely think they did deserve all of it. And I don't know, part of me thinks when you're coming up with these lists, of course, you got to hit the homers, like all the big WWF teams, WCW teams. But I feel like once you start thinking internationally, you quickly get to the Miracle Violence connection.
Surprisingly, unsurprisingly, WWE did not have them on their list.
Well, obviously, because even though technically they both wrestled there, because Gordy was, remember, he was the Executioner versus the Undertaker one time.
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember. But hold on. WWE puts WCW teams on their lists, and like the Rock and Roll Express never wrestled for Vince McMahon, but they're on every list.
They were on, so they had so many matches for the NWA and Smoky Mountain tag titles on WWF on like King of the Ring 93 and stuff.
How, oh yeah, I forgot about those already. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
I know.
Midnights and the Rock and Rolls get put on these lists, and they were never Vince teams, but Doc and Gordy, you know.
Because I feel like Doc and Gordy in WCW, for example, like they weren't there very long, but they were very impactful. So when you think of WCW, you're going to get to them quick. But when you're thinking of from the WWE mind frame of thinking of WCW teams, you're not going to get there because they had a short stint. I feel like lists don't necessarily go with impact. They go a little more with longevity, and they weren't in WCW that long.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, their run altogether actually isn't that long.
I know, that surprised me a little bit when I was just like, oh, this was shorter than I thought, because they're seen as so influential, and I mean, obviously are, but like they're definitely revered, and you'd think it was like this titanic run, and it really wasn't.
Yeah, their WCW stuff is short, and then it's just, but there's a bajillion matches of them because they would do all those tours where they were wrestling every night.
Yeah, they're all Japan. They racked up match after match after match.
So there is a lot of stuff out there, but it wasn't as long as I had thought, for sure. And the fact that their last match is that ECW match, I didn't even try to track it down. I refused.
Oh, I found it.
I was like, I can't do it. I this week we'll get into it because we're about to talk about what matches we watch. I went to the start and I hit their sweet spot and I just lived in their sweet spot. I didn't.
Well, most of their run is a sweet spot. There's not a lot of time where that fruit ain't ripe.
I didn't. I didn't want to get too late.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, there's the Gordy after the whole hospitalization thing, and he's just never the same.
Yeah. So I kept it. I did what I normally do. I start early, and then I was like, oh, 92, 93, perfect.
All right, then yeah, hit me with it. Let me hear what you got into.
All right. So I started with Misawa Kawada from 90. Then I moved on to a Dynamite Kid and Johnny Smith, also from 1990. Then I moved on to a Bam Bam Bigelow and the British Bulldog, also from 1990. Then I dipped my toe into WCW. I watched them beat some jobbers up because that is fun for me. They beat up Joey Maggs and Terry Bronson. And then they beat up the Italian Stallion and Ricky Nelson. Then I watched them against the Steiners from WCW. I dipped back to 91 for a little Misawa Kawada rematch in 91. And then I watched them against Rhodes and Wyndham from WCW. And then I finished with them against the Patriot and the Eagle from 1993.
Okay. There was a little bit of crossover. It's funny. You'll hear. Okay. I started with the Misawa Kawada, but it was the rematch. I was like, why did we start the same one? You said 90. I was like, oh, I saw the 91 one.
Oh, no. Yeah, the one I chose was 1990, and like it's early in them teaming. Doc's still in like the singlet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw the year after in the December 91 one. Then I watched a Tenryu and Hansen from 90. All Japan, obviously. Then I watched a Worldwide from 87 versus Eddie Gilbert and Dick Murdoch. Then I saw Misawa Kobashi in 92, Baba and Andre from 1990, a Malenko's from 91, a Misawa and Kawada from, a different 91. This is in July, so 7 months after. Then I saw a Jumbo Tsuruta and a Shunji Chikano from 1990. Then I got into the Steiners from Clash 92. Then a Steiners Worldwide. Then I watched Doc and Gory versus the O'Days from Clash 19. Then Bam Bam and Davey Boy blew my mind when I saw it. I was like, I need to see this. Oh, my God. Then I saw the Italian Stallion Ricky Nelson. Then I saw a Dustin and Barry from Great American Bash 92. Then the Dynamite and Johnny Smith from 90. Then I saw him versus the Holy Demon Army from 93. And whoo, baby. And then I found I ended it with the Eliminators in 1996 from ECW.
Woof. I was like, I'm sure I can find it if I really try, but I'm not sure I can. I'm not sure that's a fun watch.
Okay, fine. Then let's get right into it. The only way I found it was some dude. It was Knight's Classic, but all spelled with K's because, you know, he was on his Facebook because that match is on like some show, but they only put it on. They put it on a release. It's on Best of Unreleased Volume 3, and then it's on some other tape as well, but that's all it was ever used for. So it is tough to track down. But guess what? Not that bad.
Really? Interesting.
Not bad at all. Like, yes, Gordy's not the same, but like everyone else is fine in the ring. And Gordy's, here's the best part. Gordy's phenomenal, and we'll get into it. So even a bad Gordy isn't bad when you look at the guys of 1996 ECW.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay, like there are rough spots early with like Gordy and Cronus, but I think everybody had rough spots with John Cronus. So, I mean, that's not too bad. But yeah, like eventually it settles into a decent match.
Yeah, so I feel like I tried to watch that Malenko's match, by the way. Fan cam is not something Colin's brain can easily process.
I wouldn't be able to do it. I knew it. I was like, fine, bring it on. I'm all about it.
Was it decent? Could you get a decent whatever out of it?
Here's the thing. We're not the same. I find it to be ambiance. I find it charming. It has a VHS patina to it, if you will. And I appreciate those things. You wanted some nice fancy YouTube clip all 1080p. I understand. Some of us just like a little vintage.
No, it's the moving of the camera that occasionally makes me ill.
Oh, please, you get to hear the people. Oh, it's great. I enjoyed it.
It gives me a bit of a headache. I started it. I got to like, I don't know. They were like just getting into it, and I was like, okay, I can't.
Oh, that's the first place I saw their sweet monkey flip cutoff spot that they do.
So, oh, that spot rules. Don't even.
Right?
Don't,
I know you know it.
Don't mention it on air because we're going to start doing it forever.
I know. It's great.
So, okay. So, in 1990, you watch Bam Bam and Bulldog. You watch Dynamite and Johnny Smith. I don't think you watched the same Misawa Kawada, but you watched a couple of them. So, 1990, that's like when they first started teaming.
Okay, then how come I have a match with them from 1987?
Okay, but they were just paired up.
They were just paired together.
I was going to say, I dug... there's some matches where they're against each other in tags that I really wanted to watch, but I did not. There's like
They're fresh. They're a team now.
Yeah. This is like their first year as a team, an actual team. This is their first tour of all Japan. This is, you know, this is where you get a good look at what they possibly could be. And man, right out the gate watching these matches, you're like, oh yeah, this works. It would never not work. There's not a universe where, you know what I'm saying? Like, this would work as long as these two were capable of making it work.
They're so perfect for what they need to be, when they need to be, where they need to be. You know what I mean? They are, well, I'll say it now. We'll get to it. They became the prototype of exactly what Japanese want Americans to be. Because, no offense, it's a little jingoistic. They kind of looked, at least at this time, they just wanted, oh, I talk about the gaijin exploitation, about how they're all foreigners are just madmen and can barely exist in the confines of a wrestling match. But like these two were that, but also they had the athletic pedigree that you couldn't, you know what I mean? They weren't like savages per se. Like I feel like sometimes the Americans get, at this time, we're talking early 90s.
Yeah, I still feel like they played their same roles that they would stateside. Dr. Death is a bit of a a bit of a world-renowned grappler, but also a large badass. And Terry Gordy is just a fucking down-south cowboy who will beat your ass.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? For the Japanese, when they bring over Americans, they want the big, crazy cowboy. You know what I mean? They want the big, wily American. That's what they want. And these two brought it in spades, especially because you had Gordy, like you said, who's the southerner, who's almost, you know, cowboy-esque to them. And then you just got Doc, who comes out in this singlet, and you're just like, oh, this guy's obviously an all-American wrestler.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because Dr. Death, like, tries to wrestle these guys, and then when things get hairy, he tags in Gordy, who just starts hitting people.
Which, okay, fine. You didn't see it. You should track it down. The Tenryu and Stan Hansen. Okay. I didn't want to watch any other Hansen matches because I only want to live in this belief. Okay, here's the comparison. Remember when I talked about how Hayabusa, whenever he gets tagged in, it always comes in off the top rope?
Yes.
Hansen is the exact same way, except anytime he gets tagged in, it is just he goes straight tornado. Every time. And he gets these matches, there's a million tags. Every single time he comes in, it is just a tornado of punches and strikes. And I was like to the point where I kept watching, I was like, he can't do it again. There's no, eventually he'll get in and just circle. Nope. Every single time he gets tagged in, it's just straight attack mode. And I'm just like, holy crap.
That and once again, that goes back to what the Japanese must want out of their Americans, especially back in the early 90s, because Stan Hansen lived a long career over there.
Why do you think they want big, brash cowboys? He was the biggest, brashest cowboy of all time.
Yeah.
But, okay, like you were saying, this is 90. This is their first time. Can you think of the balls these dudes? Like, I understand when, you know, the stories you hear on interviews and stuff, like, oh, when you go over there, they're like, oh, it's a shoot over here. You might as well, and, you know, all the Americans talk about beating the dog crap. You hear the Steiners tell their stories of, you know, lumping up people like, oh, that poor Azuka match where he just killing dudes. The balls these guys have to come in on their first rookie year in All Japan, they're like, no, we're just going to beat the crap out of every Japanese guy.
Yeah. That's why, so it was great seeing the Misawa Kawada, the early one, the 1990 one, and then watching 91 when they've already had their go at each other. Oh, man. I could watch those teams fight forever.
Yeah, it's great. It required a different note taking on my side because like these matches are long and complicated and just intricate and back forth. Like I almost have to take notes in a different way. Like when you're watching like a WWF match, it's like, all right, here's the beginning, here's the middle, here's the end. These matches are literally just fights for 20 minutes and maybe there's a crazy ending. But tell me if you saw this. Heat in these matches is, I'll stay in there and take moves for as long as I feel like it. Then when I feel like getting out, I'll just get out.
Yeah. Pretty much. Center,
it's like, oh, we will cut him off. We will beat this man up for 5 minutes. Here it's like, I'll take a beating for a minute and a half, maybe, and then whenever I feel like I'm ready, I'm just going to fight back and tag out. And it's just back forth. It was so hard for early on my mind to like break it down because I was like, oh, there really is no structure.
Well, right, there isn't, but so they use those things to build towards their eventual goal. It's the same, you know, it's the same general premise.
Yes, but it's a lot more chaotic, and which helps because it's these matches were just chaos and it was fun.
Man, in the Misawa Kawada rematch, when Gordy and Misawa get a little chippy in the corner, and then just back up and lock up just so they can start throwing bombs at each other. I got on my feet. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. Which, all right. One of the notes I took was, I was like, these matches are just filled with unplanned strikes to one another. The amount of bruises these poor men must have. I just like some of these matches, like there was one time, you know, some guy was getting up as he was like, oh, I'm going to go strike him. But, you know, hit him way early as he was getting up. And I was just like, oh, I bet you that just sucked and hurt for no reason.
Yeah. And they were just, and either Terry Gordy's the best seller of all time, or
the
there
best
was a
seller of all time,
or there was at least one or two of those Misawa forearms that almost put him on his ass, whether he liked it or not.
Which, okay, let's get to it while we're at it, because you brought it up. How good is Terry Gordy? Oh, dear Lord.
Good, yeah. I mean, he's, and it's so good because him and Doc are both big, intimidating figures, right? But
yes.
Then Terry Gordy is somehow the bigger, more intimidating of the two and takes no shit.
But he's also the flexible one. Like, if you watch these matches, Doc don't bend. Terry will bend.
Well, I feel like Terry gives... He is determining when you will give it back to him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's going to run wild on you, and then when he thinks it's fine, then he'll let you. But, like, okay, for example, in the Dynamite Kid match, he takes all Dynamite stuff. Doc doesn't really.
Well, that's... Yeah, that is true. Man, another example... I know we talked about this during the British Bulldogs episode. Dynamite must have been a pill to work with.
Right, right. You're watching that match, and he just steers clear. He comes in, hits his stuff, tags out. Poor little Johnny Smith got to get all beat up and lumped up.
Yeah, I love the Doc and Gordy. I don't know what you call it. I don't know. You can't really call it a spot, I guess. But just like their thing of like when the guy starts kind of fighting back and getting like the better, just pitch him to the floor on your side and just beat the shit out of him.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. There's so much they rule the floor. Which is great, because then in those matches with, you know, the Japanese guys, eventually sometimes they get up on them, and it's twice as big because they're known for, they never lose on the floor for the most part.
Yeah, it's like it's their thing. It's like, oh shit, this guy's coming back on me. Nope, pitch him to the floor. Get him, Gordy. And Gordy just eats some dude on the floor.
Yeah, I appreciated all of it.
They also love to just hop in the ring and help their partner.
Oh, and the crowd hates it every time. It's insane.
It's so good because it's so small. It's not like this big, drawn-out thing. They'll literally just come in and hit the dude who's in control and then just get back out. And it's like, who's going to stop them? Literally, who's going to stop them?
And the crowd gets so mad. It's so simple, but... I don't really think of other teams that did it or did it as well as them, but yeah, the crowd just hates it every time.
Yeah, sometimes I don't watch things with volume while I'm doing this, but a couple of these matches I was watching with volume, like the first one, the Masao Kawada one. Man, those people hate Doc and Gordy. They hate them.
Which, I'll say it right now, what the best part about them is they are not afraid to be heels. They are 100% the bad guys every time they're in Japan.
Oh, and Gordy just doing his little rumble shake.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you call that thing, but I love it.
But they just do, you know, they'll do a basic cheat maneuver, and then they'll just look at the crowd and give them some guff, and the crowd eats it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's nuts.
It's great. Like I said, I don't know if they knew they were or they just lucked out, but they are the prototype. When you go to Japan, if you're a big dude, you want to be one of them.
Man, I'm not sure they're... not to be whatever, but they don't make them like that anymore.
I don't think they do. That's why in my head I was like, if a team ever went to Japan that were big guys like that, they're not going to have the balls to just beat the piss out of everybody. They're going to play it political and be good. Like, I don't know, somebody smartened them up. Some, who knows, probably Hansen was like, just go kill everyone. And they did.
That's probably true. I did see a Holy Demon Army while I was scrolling through. And then that is one that I meant to watch, but I just didn't get to.
Oh, it's great because it's in 93. So it's later in their run. So, you know, I mean, everyone's at their full powers. Or at least have gotten better to this point.
Right. And I know they wrestled Misawa and Kawada a crap ton of times, but we get the actual team, the Holy Demon Army.
Yeah, it was really good. That one I watched late. That one I watched... Okay, I watched that right before the Eliminator. So that's the second to last one, and that one was great.
Man, I'm going to have to stalk this Eliminators match down now. Now that you tell me it's good.
Oh, yeah, I got that. I could still find it. It's probably in my history somewhere. I could send it to you.
So All Japan, 90, 91, then 92 hits, and we are in full WCW mode.
I was going to say, we got to go to WCW. Tell me what you thought about it, because for the most part, it was just a lot of Steiners. How did you feel?
So that I could probably watch them wrestle the Steiners. That's another team that I could probably watch them wrestle forever. It's interesting because you can see there's a lot more give and take now that they're in WCW, and especially with the Steiners. But I don't know. I don't know if it makes it more fun for me, but it's definitely interesting after watching how they wrestle in Japan and then watching them in WCW and how they were able to just adapt right back into TV style.
I was going to say, you know, they're in a different company. They wrestled a different style. I was okay with the fact that they changed a little bit. I didn't think it was a negative, and it sounds like you did.
No, I didn't think it was a negative. It's just when you're going against the Steiners, there's a little more give and take and a little more structure than would be to a it strays from a little bit of what makes them so great, I think.
Yeah, they're definitely a little more toned down, obviously. But right. I also think that's also because they're in there with the Steiners, who are the top team, and they're also the Steiners. Like, you don't want to mess with that.
No, right. They're also, yeah, the Steiners are also two fucking shoot badasses that I wouldn't want to really mess with. So they were fun. I don't know.
But okay. You say that, and you say you can watch it all the time. But I know I actively skipped the 30-minute draw at Bash at the Beach or whatever, and you didn't watch it either, so...
Oh yeah, no, I wasn't going there.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the one thing I watched so the Steiner matches were great, obviously. The one I watched was the Dustin Rhodes Barry Windham match from Great American Bash 92. But before it, I saw a clip of Eric Bischoff burying it, and he was correct in his assessments. That match is not so good because it's Dustin and Barry's third match of the night. Like, the NWA tournament got all cattywampus. Like, I think the clash earlier is all supposed to be first round, but Doc and Gordy squashed the O'Days, which we'll get to that. But then they also apparently took out the Puerto Rican team, so the Steiners got a bye, so they wrestled twice on the clash. But now on the Great American Bash, they only had to wrestle once. But Barry and Dustin had to wrestle three times, and they had to follow the Vader Sting match, which of course was awesome. So like the crowd's very deflated, and this match is literally just four big guys doing as what I could describe to you as a Rochester chain, which is just four guys on the, you know, two guys in, two guys on the apron, just tag in and out and wrestle around.
So I'm familiar with that match. That Great American Bash 92 is one of my favorites because it's all tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
So I was familiar with that one. Kind of whatever that I didn't watch it now. Although without that Eric Bischoff knowledge, I wouldn't have. I would have still loved it because I remember loving that match back in the day. But I watched the title flip on Saturday night with Rhodes and Windham.
Yeah, that was the one I was hoping for. I thought I had found it, but then I was like, oh, the pay-per-view. I hadn't watched any pay-per-view, so I was like, all right, let me see some pay-per-view matches.
Oh, yeah, no. And that one, yeah, it's I could see that. Rhodes and Windham did wrestle over and over again. Wow, man.
My favorite is Bischoff when he's burying it. He's like, so they have this long, you know, this slow, methodical match. The crowd's just blah, blah, blah. And then he wins with a clothesline. Why would you have this whole match and Doc wins with a clothesline? And I was just like, I see where Doc's coming from, probably off Japan, blah, blah, blah. But, like, American Booker man Eric Bischoff is all like, a clothesline? The finish was a clothesline? Wait, why would the finish be a clothesline?
The finish to the Saturday night title switch is even worse, though.
Oh, what is that?
It's real weird. I don't even remember exactly how it's gotten into, but like Doc is getting pushed out of the ring. Gordy is confused. Dustin Rhodes comes in from the apron, just runs across the ring and bulldogs him, and then Windham pins him. Like, straight out of a Heat, too. Like, they were taking heat on Barry Windham, heat on Barry Windham, heat on Barry Windham. There's some kind of distract where the ref's getting Doc out. Dustin comes in and hits a bulldog. 1, 2, 3. Over.
Which, I will take a slight aside. One thing, of course, you cannot fail to realize when watching Doc and Gordy versus Barry and or Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes is that Barry Windham is amazing! Especially at this time, because there's such a weird pastiche of wrestlers, and like Doc and Gordy only really have good matches with the Steiners because, you know, they're all physical dudes. But Barry's the only one who could actually have like a wrestling match with these dudes. Why? Because at that time, Barry was bulletproof.
Well, I don't know, though. You said you did watch them against the Italian Stallion and Ricky Nelson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm.
Bro, but okay, no, we need to talk about them versus the O'Days. Do you remember the O'Days, the Australia team?
Yeah, so I was obsessed with that tournament when I was younger. So I used to have that. I used to watch the Clash matches and then the pay-per-view matches. I vaguely remember the O'Days.
Okay, as I called them, Dad O'Day and Son O'Day. Okay, exactly. Dad gets in with Gordy and gets put in half crab. He tags out. Son hits a sunset flip on Gordy. Why? Because Gordy's the flexible one. He'll take moves. But then he, then somehow Doc gets in, gives the Son a rather pedestrian Saito. Then Dad O'Day gets in. And he grabs a side headlock on one Terry Gordy. And Terry Gordy then proceeds to put this old 50s-plus looking man right on his neck in the grossest, like, legit just folds this old dude up. And you're just like, and you just see the dude, like, his soul escapes. And then there's something Doc gets in, it's the Stampede, 1, 2, 3. But I'm like, why do they not fold up the young boy? They folded up the old rusty dad.
Well, one of these two has a future, potentially. Let's snuff out the other one, I guess.
I guess. It was short and to the point, but yeah. Poor Father O'Day got destroyed. And you know what you think? Once again, when you think destroy, you think backdrop driver. You think Dr. Death. No. It's just tall-ass Terry Gordy just grabbed him by the waist and just leaned back. And it went, whoo, baby.
But that's so the Steiners matches and then them beating up jobbers is probably as close as you're going to get with them to where they were in Japan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. They played to their strengths. I'm mad. There's a couple. There were no TV ones. There were a couple Arn and Larry matches.
Arn's ooh. And they were the...
Eaton. I think it was Arn and Eaton. Arn and Eaton.
Okay. Arn and Zbyszko are a PWI Tag Team of the Year we haven't covered yet.
No, I know. You always bring that up. Trust me, I'm a fan of the Enforcers.
They're the wackiest. They're one of the wackiest PWI Tag Team of the Years that you can.
When we're talking tag teams, I want to cover this wacky tag team of Giant Baba and Andre the Giant.
Oh, yeah. So that was another one. So I had watched a bunch of 1990, and I was already into WCW stuff and trying to look for later stuff. And I came across that match, and I took a pause. I was like, do I go backwards just so I can watch this Giant Baba Andre the Giant match? I did not.
Okay, well, let me tell you. It's what I like about it, first thing, is Gordy looks small because Gordy always looks big, but in this match, he looks small.
How big was Terry Gordy?
I don't know. He was, whatever he was, he looked bigger.
Because Dr. Death, I think, was what, 6'2", 6'3"?
Probably. Yeah, so Gordy's probably 6'4", 6'5".
I was going to say, you got to think Gordy's like 6'6", then, because there are times where you look at him and Gordy's got a good little bit on Doc.
Well, in this match, when he's in there with legitimately two giants, he looks small. And it's funny because, once again, he's the flexible one. Like, and here's the best part. Here's where his selling came in great. Because since he always sells big, it did not look weird when he did it for Baba and Andre. Doc, of course, being, you know, knows he's working for legitimately his boss in Giant Baba and Andre the Giant, who both are well late into their careers. You know, they could still crack an egg, but not with a lot of ferocity. And he's flying all over the place, so it just looks weird because, once again, he's not known for that. But Gordy gets in there, and Gordy does great with them because he's able to, you know, be big and animated and fire up on them without actually killing them. And then he's able to flip-flop and fly for them, too. So it works out really great. And then the finish is, of course, Gordy takes it. Is Baba's in the corner, he charges, eats a big boot, and then he gives him that running neckbreaker drop, which just looks like a big clothesline. One, two, three.
Easy peasy. Weird.
But it was just, you really noticed that, like, oh, okay, Gordy's the, you know, the worker of the team, and then Doc just goes in there and eats people alive. But they're in there with the boss and the Andre the Giant, and they got to put over that these guys are supposedly indestructible. So every little thing, they're flip-flopping and flying, but for Terry Gordy, it's not that awkward. But for Doc, it's a little awkward. You could see he just looks, he looks out of place in that match.
Well, it's the boss and the draw. I mean, no matter what promotion or company or era, bringing Andre the Giant was the draw.
Yep, no, definitely was.
Yeah, I can't remember what point I was going to make about that, but it's gone now.
Now, I have to ask you, because you saw it early, were you as pumped for the team of Bam Bam Bigelow and Davey Boy Smith as I was?
I couldn't not watch it. I had to watch it, you know?
Dude, like, I saw that I was going through, and I was just, I like, stopped, like, looked in the room, like, no, of course I'm in a room by myself, but I'm like, does anybody else see this? Are my eyes deceiving me? And I looked, I was like, holy, I was like, yep, I'm watching this right now.
Yeah, and it is, so it's super young Bam Bam, right?
I think everyone's young. It's 1990.
Yeah, but I mean, at that point, the Bulldog had already been, you know, him and Dynamite already had their run.
Yeah, I guess, but didn't Bam Bam start in, like, 85, 86, something like that? But yeah, okay, still 3, 4, or 5 years, whatever. I see what you mean. Yeah,
but Bulldog, you know, like, the British Bulldogs were a Japanese team. They wrestled all over Japan. I would have to look and see if Bam Bam was doing a whole lot of All Japan before random 1990.
I'm sure he did random stuff here and there. But yeah, this team, I don't know. And especially for some reason in my brain, I was like, oh my gosh, they're like the WWF team.
Right, but at that point, had Bam Bam even sniffed the WWE yet? No, right?
I would assume. Wasn't he in the Garden in like 88 and stuff?
I was going to say, when's his debut? I know Oliver Humperdinck debuted him or something, so it's got to be. I guess it was late 80s.
Yeah, but I just thought it was great because it was just a bunch of big dudes being big dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
Except
and
the curveball of Davey and Bam Bam could do drop kicks.
Yeah, true. Terry Gordy could throw a drop kick.
Oh, definitely. But I mean, that's the funny part is like, you know, I know there's a couple of spots where it's like they're going strike, strike, strike. And then, you know, Bulldog's like, all right, what's my big move? Oh, dropkick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I do love that. Here was the open of the match. It was Gordy and Davey do big man stuff to Davey presses Gordy. Davey presses Doc. Gordy then clotheslines Davey. So Doc could then press him and do 3 reps.
I was just going to say. You say that when Davey needed a move, he would throw a drop kick. No, he wouldn't. He would press slam these big dudes, show off his muscles.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It was he pressed Davey for 3, then pressed Gordy on top of him.
Yeah. That one is interesting because it does, like, because they're all Americans or North American, you know, American style wrestlers. They do wrestle a bit more of an American match.
Of course, they're 4 Americans.
Yeah.
Well, British guy, whatever.
He counts. We claim him as ours. He's our British Bulldog, all right?
That's fine.
But yeah, there was some semblance of psychology here. There was at least some building of spots and, you know, the match is fine. There's definitely a reason why no one has ever seen it before, though.
Exactly. Yeah. It didn't quite live up to expectations. It was more, It was more just a random tag match then, as opposed to like this epic combination.
I don't know what it is about me, but every time I'm doing this, these are the kind of matches I get caught up on, because I feel like I've watched so much wrestling in my life that when I see like a random pairing that I don't think I've ever seen, I'm like, oh, I gotta watch that. And it's always the same result where it's like, oh yeah, that was fine. That's probably why no one's ever seen it before.
Yeah. You're like, why doesn't this get a lot of play? Oh, I see why it doesn't get a lot of play. It's just okay. It's good.
But, you know, are you like that where, like, because, you know, I've seen a lot of wrestling, and I'm always trying to see more wrestling and different wrestling and things I haven't seen. So when I see a wacky pairing, I'm like, oh, I'm watching this. And then it almost never pans out.
Well, because wacky pairings usually don't make the best pairings. Like, they're just wacky for wacky's sake.
I'm always looking for that diamond in the rough. I'm always looking for that, you know.
You're always looking for Sting and Lex, but you end up with Rock and Sock.
Yeah, I'm telling you. There is a match, though, that I almost watched. I passed by it a bunch of times, and every time I'd get confused, and then I go, ah, crap, they're on different teams. It's like Terry Funk and Terry Gordy against Dr. Death and Sting.
Whoa.
I passed by it a couple times on YouTube, and I'd be like, whoa, Terry Funk and Sting? Oh, they're crap. They're the pairings aren't correct. Shoot. But it's definitely something I'm...
I think there's one where I kept looking, and it ended up being, it was Gordy and Hansen, not Doc and Hansen. I was like, oh, I keep seeing that one and getting excited. And I'm like, oh, no way, that's a different team.
Yeah. I get caught up like that. There's also a match where they wrestle each other in 93 that I definitely made note of to go back and watch later. I don't know what they would do against each other in 93, but I'm kind of scared.
Well, like I said, I remember in 93, they had some good stuff going on. That's when I saw the Holy Demon Army one, and that one was really good. So they were at least firing on their cylinders at that time.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm afraid.
Oh, what they're going to do to each other?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, just think about what we just watched with the two of them against other people and how they worked. How do you, I can't even – my brain can't even necessarily wrap around what them wrestling each other would look like.
A tornado, or it might be one of those odd style clashes where, like, Matt and Jeff Hardy, you know, their matches were never that great.
Yeah, that's true. They do actually, I don't know, maybe I'm totally crazy here, but being that they are so perfectly matched, they do have kind of an odd dynamic.
In what way? You mean as against each other or when they're tagging?
No, as partners, the matches don't go necessarily how you maybe think they should. Like, and I think that's just because of what you're talking about with Dr. Death not being the most
Yeah, he's not the worker of the group. He's the fighter. He's just gonna fight every time he's in there. But Gordy's the one who actually works in there.
But then sometimes Doc gets put on his heels, and then Gordy has to come in and clean up.
Yeah, I agree. No, there's definitely, but when I watched, for the most part, a lot of the times the people getting cut off was Gordy.
I don't know. I feel like I saw Dr. Death get cut off a bunch and have to get beat up, and then Gordy have to come in and just clean up and just start punching people in the teeth. It's just, I don't know. Something about them worked so good, but there is still like an odd dynamic of the team where you're not sure.
I think it's an odd dynamic that we've run in. I think it's happened with other teams, too, where the bigger member of the team is the worker of the team as opposed to the, you know, the star, per se.
Right. Right. So you think that Doc should be doing so much more, but then sometimes he's just the guy who's getting put on his heels by these other guys, and then Gordy comes in and just cleans house, and it's like, wait a second. Doc should have probably been cleaning house on, he probably could have cleaned house on his own, right? No? Okay, well, whatever.
Well, and once again, like we said earlier, especially in the All Japan matches, they're only on their heels for as long as they want to be.
Yeah, it's such a and that's just All Japan as a whole, especially in this era. It's such an interesting structure to these matches, such an interesting way that they seem to run. Which I don't know. It's super cool to watch, but I don't think it works now.
I don't think it works. Ugh, this is gonna sound so gross. I don't think it works with like the current crop of wrestlers. Like, if more wrestlers, like, I feel like every wrestler in the 80s knew, no matter what happens, if I get tagged into the ring, go bonkers. I feel like right. Nowadays, if you tag a guy in who doesn't know what's going on, he's just going to look at you like a deer in headlights. Whereas at least these guys always knew, no matter what, when I get tagged in, I'm going to go bonkers for a minute, and then we'll figure out what's going on.
And some of those, like, in the Rhodes and Wyndham match, it was so good. Like, I feel like I was watching Terry Gordy, like, while he was beating Dustin Rhodes up, like, kind of hand-holding Dustin Rhodes to, like, the next thing, you know?
Oh, absolutely, because you gotta think, that's super young Dustin, and Gordy's been wrestling since he was, what, 13 or something crazy like that?
There was some spot where, like, Gordy is just taking it to Dustin and gets out of the ring and walks away, and you can see him say something, and Rhodes sells away, and then when Doc comes in, he arm drags Doc, and I was like, oh, he told him to arm drag him. What, he little pass the note back and forth.
Yeah, no, Gordy's amazing, and yeah, that's why I think he works so well, especially I could see it with the Barry and the Dustin matches, because if you watch those matches, that's why it's a little weird, because you're not used to seeing that in American tag wrestling, where tag guy in, he goes bonkers for a sec, maybe gets cut off, maybe cuts the guy off for 30 seconds to a minute. That guy makes a comeback, tags out, here comes the next guy, he runs wild for 30 seconds, then he gets cut off, or he takes a cut off, or, you know what I mean, either or, boom, boom, boom. So I think that style would be a lot tougher today, because people just don't wrestle that style today.
Yeah, I guess the Rhodes and Wyndham one is more that Japanese style, a little bit, with just get in the ring and whatever until it's time to not be in the ring, and then tag your way out, or, you know, cut the other guy off and find your way out, and then reset.
And I don't know if it's, maybe it's just Jim Ross's commentary being so good, but I feel like what they're doing there, despite not being the most exciting, is like 1,000% like what The Office wanted. Like, I feel like Bill Watts was like, heck yeah, that's right, work a headlock into an arm bar for 3 minutes. Yeah, 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 put him in that STF and just wrench on it. And I was just like, and they put it over and it's great. And I, of course, I can enjoy it. But I was like, I wonder if it was the same for other people, where it just seemed a little, I don't know, maybe by modern day standards, maybe that's the lens I was watching. It seems like, oh, it's not the most fast paced stuff. Maybe like you said earlier, when they're, you know, there was something a little off with their curveball in America.
Yeah, no, I think you are correct to a degree. I have started watching a lot of the matches on 1.5 speed, as you suggested. And Julia comes to the room and she's like, what's going on? He sounds like an auctioneer, talking about Jim Ross.
Oh, yeah. But, oh, he's so good at calling this stuff. And part of me is like, no, I feel like their instructions were like, all right, you're four big guys, go out there and, you know, do like amateur wrestling. But then again, there's a reason why amateur wrestling isn't, you know, drawing huge ratings and doesn't have a show on Monday nights and things like that. So sometimes I'm watching and I'm like, I could appreciate as a wrestler, but I was like, does the crowd really care that he's going for, you know, the behind the back arm bar so that he can, you know, get to, so he can shoot a half for a pin?
No.
That's what I think. Yeah. So but when I'm listening to the commentary, I'm like, oh, yeah, Jim Ross is, you know, loving every second of it. And, you know, I'm sure Bill Watts is too. And that's what they pushed. Like, Steiners and Doc and Gordy were main eventing some shows. So they definitely liked what they were doing.
Yeah, literally, when I talk about this era of WCW, I call it the Ric Flairless era, and then followed up with, yeah, you know, when they used to push Doc and Gordy.
Exactly.
Doc and Gordy were like main stars in this era for WCW.
Yeah, they got pushed huge, and, you know, little, what year was this? All right, you know, when I was super duper young, I wasn't old at all during this. I wasn't in my young formative years when this was on. I was years old watching this, and I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, when Lee Moriarty was like 15, 16, they were running hot.
Yeah, he was watching with a full mustache, and he was pumped.
All right, let's talk about what made Dr. Death Steve Williams and Bam Bam Terry Gordy, the Miracle Violence connection, so great.
I said it before. I'm going to say it. I was a little bit of a spoiler. They were the heelest of heels. You know, we watch a lot of these Japanese matches with these big teams, you know, like Misawa's, Kobashi's, people like that. And these matches are they're dense and they're very back and forth, and there's never no like clear cut. When Miracle Violence Connection is in there, oh, it's clear cut. They are the bad guys, and they're going to be the bad guys. They're going to play the bad guys, and they're going to get, you know what I mean? Like we said, literally just getting in and doing the most basic of cheat, breaking up their opponent, their teammate being in a hold in the crowd, always grums and groans. That plus, like I said, they became the blueprint of what Japanese want out of a gaijin or an American coming over there. And these two, like, they're legends for a reason.
Yeah, so all I kept coming back to is that they have to be the most believable tag team in professional wrestling history. Not only did they look scary and look like badasses and look like dudes you don't want to fuck with, watch them wrestle and their style 100% backs it up. There's like one of the big things about pro wrestling, not to pull back the veil, is believability, though. Like, you need people to believe that what you're doing is 100% real. And I'm not sure there's a minute watching Dr. Dusty Williams and Terry Gordy where you don't think, oh, yeah, nope, that's 100% what's going on right now. Like, no, no need to convince me otherwise. They are beating people up.
Here's another feather in their cap for being a great team. Everything you just said, if those two came out on Raw or Dynamite, and we're talking about this is 2021 where wrestling's a lot more aesthetic. These guys were not the prettiest. They were not the most cut. But I guarantee you, Doc comes out there and starts doing his running in place, and then Gordy starts doing his shuffle, and they charge in that ring, and they clear the ring like they did in one of these matches I watched. It was crazy. Oh, versus Jumbo and Chuji Chikano, they sprint right to the ring, start hitting a bunch of shoulder tackles, clear the ring, and start and then here's the thing. They're giants doing crisscross spots. That would get over 1,000% today. They don't need to be pretty. They don't need a six-pack. They don't need feathered hair. They just need to get in there, be big, and clear house.
But the feathered hair wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't. I mean, I'm sure it would look good on Gordy, but I'm just saying, God, man, that one match, literally, you see them sprint, and it's a long run to the ring, and they get right in there, and they just start tackling people and clear the ring, and then they just start doing crisscrosses, because not only are these guys big, they're actual athletes, so these matches go 20, 30, 40 minutes, and they got no problem with it.
All right, now, I say this, I feel like I say this a bunch, and you always have an answer, but eventually I feel like we're going to get to a point where there is no answer. How do we defeat the Miracle Violence Connection?
Spoiler, you ruined it. I have no idea.
I knew it. I was like, because I was thinking and I was like, I don't even know what Cheech is going to try and throw at me this week. But this is another one of those weeks where it's like, just like the Steiners, like, I don't know, man. Try to survive. Just
try and survive. That's all it is. If they let me. One of my notes is, and I quote, "You exist as long as Gordy lets you."
Yeah, it's 0% a joke.
I want to put that on a t-shirt.
With just Terry Gordy standing there.
I mean, I say this as I'm staring at my Miracle Violence Connection t-shirt that I bought online. But, yeah, I think I now need to make a shirt that says, "You exist as long as Gordy lets you," and then just a badass picture of Terry Gordy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I don't know how we would defeat them. Potentially by what's that thing where they beat you up so bad that you actually win the match?
Yeah, we'll do that, or we'll go by WWF rules and we'll make them break up two pins and be like, "Aha! They broke the secret rule. We win! Ha ha!"
Yeah, the only ways I can see us winning this is by some kind of disqualification or default ruling in our favor. So we'd have to shoot for that. I mean, I can take a beating, man.
But, bro, I got my neck. You know, I've taken a lot of head dumps. I don't think I could survive one from them.
I could maybe hang in there long enough for the referee to reverse the decision.
Because here's the thing. In all these matches we watch, No one was even remotely our size. Dean Malenko is even bigger than us. You know what I mean? And his brother Joe's way bigger.
That's true. Well, I mean, we're taller than Dean.
I know, we're taller, but I'm just saying he was a thick boy.
He was at least 210, 215.
Yeah, he definitely weighed more than us, and especially in Japan, he's even in better shape, and then Joe's in better shape. Like, think about it. I watched him for Steiners, Tenru, Hansen, Kobashi, Misawa, maybe Eddie Gilbert. What, he just took a bunch of moves? That's all we would do. We would do what Eddie Gilbert and Dick Murdoch did. We would take a bunch of moves, sell big, and then pray that we only have to take like a 3-point stance from Doc or something. I mean, I could maybe survive a stampede, but only one run. When he does the double run, I feel like it's way worse.
you're not wrong.
It's the double run.
You're not wrong. Listen, like I said, I can survive a little bit of a beating. So we'll just hope that the referee takes pity on me. I don't know. Let's go with that.
I did just have a flashback that I used to do Oklahoma Stampede because of my fandom for Dr. Death way back in the day when I was young and spry.
Wow. I like that young and spry means that you can do an Oklahoma Stampede.
Oh, bro, you gotta be. It's not easy.
All right, that's it.
It's twice as scary. I was like, once again, we talk about it. Not only are they monsters, they're also cardio monsters. That's not an easy thing to do.
Nope, sure ain't. But that's it. That's the Miracle Violence Connection. That's Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy.
Okay, let me ask. Did it live up to it? You were excited for it, right? How are you feeling on the other end?
Oh yeah, I literally could watch those two wrestle all day. It never gets tiresome to me. There's no like at a point there's not necessarily much nuance. There's not much you really have to pay attention to. It's just good old down home fighting.
Well, that's the best part. You feel like you get like a 2-for-1. You get a fight and a wrestling match. Because eventually it does become wrestling match. But like for a while there's definitely segments of fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 2-for.
No, I enjoy it. Like I said, that I came up loving that those types of guys. And I continue to this day. I could watch Dr. Death and Terry Gordy. I'm probably going to watch them wrestle each other just for science, I guess. At this point, I need to know what that looks like.
I bought a Marky-ass t-shirt because I loved him so much.
I love that. I'm really glad that, well, I'm not really glad, but whoever we potentially would have wrestled this weekend, I'm very glad that we don't have to wrestle them.
Oh, man, I would have been a lot of backdrop drivers.
Because, as we've discussed before, we kind of, the last thing we watched kind of stuck in our brains a little bit. And I'd have been beating people up. I'd have just been throwing hands like Gordy.
Yeah, it would have been a lot of shoulder tackles, a lot of power slams, a lot of power bombs. Whoo, some of those Gordy bombs. Ooh, baby.
Oh, I know. Yeah, like, maybe I like them so much because I know I could never be them. It's like one of those things.
I see what you mean. Yeah, they're such an anomaly. It's like, oh, that's something I can't do. You know what I mean? We can watch other teams to do that. What they do, we can't do.
No, I could never. Yeah, I couldn't. I think it's why I'm so fascinated by them.
That's right. You hear it here. Us two, full-on professionals, fanboy like we should be.
Yeah, about Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
That's right, because we a tag team that loves tag teams.
That's right. You're hitting the tagline late.
Well, you know, close enough.
All right. That's it. Another one down. And we're in the early 90s here, so now it's time to venture newer?
Yes.
Older would be tough.
Listen to this part. You'll understand when I had earlier said, oh, okay, we did Billy and Chuck. Let's pick the manly version of that. I don't think there's a more manly, I don't think we could pick the manly version of the Miracle Violence Connection. So no. Maybe we just need to go 180 and get like two chicken shits or something.
I don't know who those are, but I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, we'll think about it. We'll chew on it. We'll see what chicken shits we could find for you people. But until then, we'll catch you next week, and adios!
See ya!